politics without the soap opera, with unfiltered constitutional conservative truth. The Conservative Review with Daniel Horowitz.
And welcome back, fellow American patriots and Minutemen standing at the ready to guard our life, liberty, property, and all that matters once again, as if this is 1776. This is your host, Daniel Horowitz, back here today, April 19th, 2024, but it is the anniversary, 249th anniversary of Lexington and Concord, the original Minutemen. This time of year is when it all began. And the difference is that back then, they didn't have subversive forces within the ranks of the Minutemen that were supposedly fighting the British. I mean, they had loyalists around there. They didn't have a subversive force among the Patriots. The problem we have today is that the very movement that claims to be fighting the uniparty, fighting the system, knows what time it is, they are part of the problem, which leads me to one of many points I want to make today, and we're going to try to get Warren Davidson on from the House floor. They're voting to betray us right now as we speak to adopt the rule. They'll vote for final passage on Saturday, which is very unusual, but that's what they're doing to give Biden everything he wants and $100 billion in foreign aid when Republicans complain about inflation. But then again, the top Republican supports this. And I thought after the primary, the presidential primary, that I would be able to kind of side by side do my thing. All right, so you sit and, you know, promote Trump, and I'm going to sit and focus on state legislation, making red states red, down ballot primaries, the few kind of issues that we could focus on in the so-called GOP-controlled House. But then I rapidly realized we have a problem. I didn't want to talk about Trump at all, like ever. But increasingly, I find I can't avoid him because you can't replant grass when you have dead grass and weeds embedded in that soil. There is no side by side. This is the problem. If the Republican Party is subversive, and the most subversive element at the top controls it, and that is the element that captures and captivates the entire base of a movement that would be the core needed to fight the uniparty, the most likely to be red-pilled about what's going on, well, that's the worst of all. You can't go anywhere. Meaning, if it would be like, look, we're not going to publicly criticize Trump, but Daniel, privately, I get it. I get he's subversive. I get he's behind everything Johnson's doing. I get this is not going to change. You know, when I need to, I'll praise him. I'll focus on him. But for the most part, I'm down with you. Focus on the primaries. Focus on the legislation. Focus on the red states. Let's convert primaries to state conventions. Let's work on that. All right, I'm fine with it. I don't care. The problem is we're not doing that. You have the whole MAGA cheering on Jim Justice as the next senator from West Virginia. This is going to keep going on. I'm sorry, but I've come to realize that you can't plant new grass unless you get rid of the dead grass. And you can't have a revolution fought by a mixture of subversive forces and utter clowns and retards. You know, let me give you the embodiment of what this movement has become. Newsweek has an article out about this woman, Tiffany Gomez. Okay, so evidently she was what became known as the Plain Lady, this woman that had this psychotic breakdown, so to speak, unless it was all contrived. The psychotic breakdown on a plane and said there's some fake person sitting next to me and she was everywhere. And then she had, you know, had this crying session and then suddenly becomes an influencer. And Newsweek announced that she wants to become a right-wing influencer. So what do you do to become a right-wing influencer? Do you, offer strategies and ideas on primaries, on legislation, on a broad vision, specific vision? No, that's not what you do. There's no money in that. She posed in a bikini for this conservative beer, so to speak, this beer company. And now she's been, that's like her baptism into the movement. So the conservative movement has become a decadent movement. Again, we wonder why women are totally screwed up. I don't know if I have time to get into this today. If not, I'll get into it next week. But there's a bunch of new data points showing how we are, that even conservative churches and Republican households are losing their daughters to the left, like at a rapid pace, really. And you're seeing this with Gen Z, a real bifurcation between men and women more than any other generation. And that's because we're not giving people a concept of what a traditional woman is. It's either the butch Title IX, she jock, like, yeah, that a bunch of Republicans are into, or this, like, to the extent they exalt femininity, it's in a promiscuous way, not in an elegant way. But anyway, that's a whole nother rabbit hole. But the point is, this is what it means to be a conservative influencer. So the left is destroying us while we're just sitting and mooning. So Trump is like the paradigm mooning, and we just all copy and mimic that behavior. You know, one example of this is, there's an article out from Politico today. Trump is demanding a 5% tribute from down ballot candidates for the first time in history. This has never been done. It was always understood you have to have a separate pot of money. There's multiple, you know, fronts in this war. And every down ballot candidate, so if you're running for governor, you're running for Congress, you have to donate 5% of your money to Trump's campaign. Now, there's a couple things to say here. Number one, obviously, again, I mean, just you're siphoning. It's ridiculous that Republicans are struggling to keep the House, and this is what you're doing. But moreover, I have sensed this. I have heard this from people. Trump has ratcheted up his establishment endorsements. And I was told from people that would know, it's all about money. And this makes a lot of sense, because if you think about it, if you are in a red district, let's say you could win with less money. So let's say no matter what, even if you don't raise as much money, you're an insurgent candidate over an establishment candidate. If you wind up winning the primary, you'll win the general election. You don't need extra money to win a red district. But there is a difference. You see, let's say you are an establishment candidate running that will raise $2 million, or you're an insurgent candidate that will only raise $400,000. You see what I'm saying? Well, we could squeeze a lot more into the Trump candidacy if we get a Pfizer sort of candidate rather than an establishment, or rather than an insurgent candidate. So if you want to know why he's endorsing them, it is the most Orwellian Animal Farm dynamic, where we have come full circle, where Trump is now screwing us on the very narrative behind his candidacy. If you look to 2015, you could Google this, Trump 2015, I'm the only candidate who cannot be bought. I'm already wealthy. Everyone's bought out by donors. I could read you 100 different statements, but I'll just read for you from the escalator speech, the famous speech when he announced his candidacy. What was it, in May 2015? Forgetting the exact date. Quote, I don't need anybody's money. It's nice. I don't need anybody's money. I'm using my own money. I'm not using the lobbyists. I'm not using donors. I don't care. I'm really rich. I'll show you that in a second. And by the way, I'm not even saying that in a braggadocious, that's the kind of thinking you need for this country. What am I supposed to do with that? We just come full circle, where this man is so desperate for cash. This is what we just nominated. So you're going to squeeze out from the other down ballot candidates. You're going to go out of your way to endorse the establishment guys who have more money. And then you're going to support Ukraine. And that's what this is all about. And by the way, a bunch of people I'm seeing are giving excuses. Daniel, it's not true. He put out a statement on Ukraine. Now, before I read that statement, which is wishy-washy, It's certainly not better, it's worse, than his statement on FISA 702, which was categorical, do not reauthorize it. Except, and that would have been fine, except that what he said privately to Johnson was different, and then publicly he divulged that last Friday, that he told them vote the way you want. So the fact that Johnson is steamrolling this is quite obvious, and there is a very important lesson, not just in the way he's prosecuting Ukraine, but essentially the way he's done every issue. And those of you who paid attention are going to remember this from when he was president, this game where he publicly opposes something and complains about it. But then even when he's president, he'll ultimately sign the bill. He'll ultimately have his cabinet members pursue rigorously that policy. But then literally in the same day, he'll complain about it in the abstract. It's a game. It's a game, and there's a reason behind it. And worried to become president again, he would continue the same thing because, again, his control over the GOP House is just as complete today not being president as it would with him being president. First, our sponsor today, FastGrowingTrees.com. You know, speaking of cleaning away the dead wood, the dead underbrush, the dead grass, now is the time to plant. April showers bring May flowers. You got limited time to take advantage of their spring sales. They're the fastest growing trees. They're the fastest delivered trees, and they are the hardiest, best quality trees around. 2 million happy customers. They have their 30-day Alive and Thrive guarantee, and my wife and I are just loving it, both for our landscaping, but also our indoor fruit trees that are tropical trees that can grow in northern climates. So this spring, take advantage of the best deals, up to half off on select plants and other deals. And listeners to this show get an additional 15% off their first purchase when using promo code conservative at checkout. That's additional 15% off fastgrowingtrees.com using promo code conservative at checkout. Again, offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply. So Trump put out this weasel statement out of nowhere, and he said, why isn't Europe giving more money to help Ukraine? So it's not like categorically, this is an abomination, inflation, we're giving Biden $100 billion, we're funding Hamas, we're funding Ukraine, it's unwinnable, it's not in our interest. No. Why isn't Europe giving more money? Notice he doesn't oppose this bill specifically. Why is it that the U.S. is over $100 billion into Ukraine war more than Europe, and we have an ocean between us, a separation? Why can't Europe equalize our match or match the money put in by the U.S.? Notice what he's saying very carefully. As everyone agrees, Ukrainian survival and strength should be much more important to Europe than to the U.S., but it is also important to us. Get moving, Europe. In addition, I am the only one who speaks for me, and while it is a total mess caused by crooked Joe Biden and the incompetent Democrats, if I were president, this war would have never started. Look at how he glides around. Well, it wouldn't have happened if I were there. Well, Europe needs to match our donation. Doesn't say this is an abomination. Why is he voting this out? And if you are, how in the world are you not attaching border security to the actual bill? Why are you voting on everything together, sewing it together as part of a rule, except for the border bill, which you're making separate? Right? Notice he's not opposing Johnson. And again, of course he's not. We don't need to sit and fixate on his statement. We have his full-blown Mar-a-Lago press conference, which was not incidental to what Johnson is doing. It was perfectly timed to give him cover. But these low IQ idiots are like, Daniel, what are you talking about? He opposes it. No, he doesn't. He said it's vital to our interests. Europe needs, it's a belly aching. Lead or get out of the way. I'm sick of this. They all exalt this man's power. Oh my gosh, Daniel, you suck. You have no power. He's going to crush DeSantis. He's going to win 70% of the vote everywhere. You're right. Leadership knows that if you get a Trump endorsement against you, it's a death knell. You're right. So use it. They always champion his control, but then when it actually comes down to it, nothing. Lead or get out of the way. It's just so bizarre. But I'm going to tell you what's happening here. Aside from what I think is a donor angle, there is also a mentality with Trump. Trump is scared to buck the system. Don't look at his demeanor. Look at core policy issues. So not only does he view a budget bill or a debt ceiling as a cliff that I can't go over. I'll bellyache about it. I'll complain about it. But ultimately, I'm going to sign the bill because I'm scared of a government shutdown. We lived through that with him for 4 years. But even Ukraine funding, which you'd say, like, that's not a must-pass bill. It's the Democrat wish list. Just don't bring it up in the House. But the system gets to him, and he views it like, darn, well, it's must pass. Let's do it the conservative way. Let's do a lend-lease program that they don't have to pay back. Folks, he did this every day as president. So he would get out there and make a statement and kind of dump on something. We shouldn't be in Afghanistan. We shouldn't be funding this. We shouldn't be doing this. But then we'd be like, well, okay, why is Mnuchin doing it? It was this game where he would broadly inveigh against something, but then specifically, he wouldn't oppose it and he would literally sign it and literally have his administration continue working on it. This is how he is, because now, is he a fraud? I mean, you could judge for yourself, but broadly, he doesn't like it. I don't think he loves funding Ukraine. See, that's the thing. If I knew he disagreed with us, I'm like, all right, fine, he disagrees with us, but on the issues he agrees with us, he'll fight for us. No, even on the issues he agrees with us, on which he agrees, he ultimately is a cuck. He is too scared to fight the system. He will do this as president. Broadly in the abstract, pretends to be opposed to something while it rolls forward with the support of his own administration. Until you stop promoting this, we can't even move beyond it. And by the way, this is going to continue happening in primaries. You know Daniel Cameron? Remember him? The Republican that Trump endorsed for the Kentucky governor in a primary, and this dude was a McConnell staffer, became attorney general of Kentucky, ran for governor, literally a McConnell acolyte. But Cameron just hugged Trump, and Trump endorsed him. Okay? We could have had a much better candidate. She dropped out because there's no point in running with Cameron getting Trump's support. And then he manages to get crushed in a deep red state in last year's governor's election, and the Democrat won re-election. Well, there's news. He recently created a PAC to help in-state Republican candidates, potentially signaling an interest in running again. What that tells me is, we all know McConnell is going to be up for re-election, whether it's a special, you know, whether he quits early, which probably is likely, or, you know, if not, it will be 2026. So the primary, really, you have to start gearing up 2025. It's not so far away. He's going to run for Senate. And if Trump is still relevant, he will support him. And if Trump is not still relevant, he still would have been elevated and catapulted into a position that's going to be very hard. He has all the name ID because of Trump. This is continuing everywhere. We're not winning this. And my message to my friends is, look, you don't need to sit and criticize Trump. If you don't want to, that's fine. But don't lie to yourself and lie to others and lie to each other that somehow this man is fighting for us and thinks about us and cares about us. He cares about nothing but himself. That was always the case. Best case scenario, you know, if you're stuck with him, you know, you pressure him, you could try to sometimes get something done, but you're too scared to do that, so you don't get anything done, so you're pathetic. But at least focus on parallel issues. Again, the biggest thing we can do, if you had all the entire MAGA movement get involved in the Republican legislatures and Republican state parties and change the rules, at least making some of the critical primary choices done by conventions, I am telling you, that is the single biggest way to get in the Freedom Caucus as the majority in the party in red states overnight. You know, we talked a lot about Wyoming. Mark Gordon's the governor, literally a Democrat. He is skipping the Republican convention because he knows he'll get booed out of there. Because, again, it's the activists. Now, they make all sorts of decisions. They have party votes, but they do not vote on, you know, governor, Senate, Congress, state legislature. They don't vote on, you know, the actual positions like the old Utah convention, which still goes on, but it could be overridden by a primary. That was a new change. If you would have the Utah convention voting on it, we would be able to get the Freedom Caucus right now has about 20 seats in the House and then maybe another 8 or so who vote with them on most issues. They're about 5 seats away from a majority. If you had state conventions, you would get that easily. All these states. But if you don't, we're going to continue going through the same process because Trump has elevated all of these people. You know, one of the big advocates for Speaker Johnson in, you know, steamrolling this, but was also pushing to get rid of motion to vacate. Now, in the end, they decided not to put it in this bill, but they'll probably put it in later. But one of the big advocates, he put out a video, is Dusty Johnson. He's the at-large congressman from South Dakota. Okay? I'm the at-large congressman. He put out a video and said the following. He said that he wants to... I don't have the quote here, but basically he's putting together a working group to get rid of motion to vacate. Dusty Johnson is one of the most liberal Republicans imaginable, and he is the at-large congressman from South Dakota. Right now, he has a lot of name ID. Right now, he plans to run for governor of South Dakota. If we don't change the way we do business, Kristi Noem will probably anoint him, and he will be the next governor. Just like we're going to have Kelly Armstrong, who's a similar at-large Rhino congressman from North Dakota, running for governor. Or Tammy, whatever her name is, Miller, the Rhino lieutenant governor. We are. It's not even like, okay, we have a bunch of bad Republicans in the past, but every new election we face, we're getting in better guys. No. You know, Tucker just lamented, oh, what's with all these red state rhinos? But it's not like he's getting on the playing field and helping me out here. Changing the party rules to state conventions is the only way we will get enough people in quickly enough to change the culture of the party and the nation, and at least red states. It's just not going to happen any other way. But the problem is there is no desire to build them. Think about that. Where's the grassroots movement to change laws in states? Where's the movement? Let me give you an example. In Nebraska, to take away this business of dividing the congressional districts for the election. Why? Because it's all about Trump's election. Like I said, I'm not opposed to that. I'm fine doing that. But I'm trying to illustrate that they have a movement where they want to have a movement. And it is all invested in the dead grass. That's my problem. I don't care what you think of Trump. Just don't lie about where we're headed with him. I'm fine if we had a code of silence, if you're scared of losing your job criticizing him, but you're just going to kind of just no runs, no hits, no errors, just, you know, focus on what I'm focusing on. But they're not, because the code of silence is much more than just dancing around it. It is actively supporting the subversion of our movement. And again, it comes along with that, the whole values issue too. Unbelievable. But I do want to check in on what is going on the House floor right now with the greatest betrayal of all time. So, folks, I'm just looking at my screen here, and this just happened. Well, it's kind of eerie having watched almost every legislative battle in the House for about 16 years. I've never really seen anything like this, where it's not just that you have a Republican speaker passing not just a bill here or there, but every single major bill exclusively and only with more Democrat support than Republican support, but now even passing the rule, which typically the minority party always votes against, no, but with more Dem support. So more Dems voted for the rule for this package of foreign aid bills than Republicans did. 55 Republicans voted against it. Folks, that's a little bit more than a quarter. And this is the more conservative caucus relative to the Senate Republicans. So that's kind of where we are. I figured I would give you a status update from someone on the floor. One of the 55 is Congressman Warren Davidson from the 8th District of Ohio. He was with us last week when we got screwed on FISA, and it's like deja vu all over again. Hey, Congressman, welcome back under the same stressful circumstances.
Yeah, Daniel, conservatives are running out of things to conserve, but I appreciate you taking time to talk to me about it. I wish I had better news to share with everyone, but bad news doesn't get better with time, so great to capture it right now as close to the event as possible.
Well, so I'm actually a little bit shocked here. So as you all know, I have a very low view of the Republican Party and have had such a view for quite a long time, but they continue to surprise me. So, you know, they gave up every point of leverage, okay? The debt ceiling gave Biden more than he asked for, 2 years rather than 1 year of debt limit increase, gave them everything they wanted on the budget, NDAA, other reauthorization bills. Okay. But then we figured, all right, fine, now it's just we don't have any leverage. We won't get anything good done, but at least we just won't pass bad things. But then it became a new thing that now we have. See, this is what I don't remember during Boehner's time, where we would actively take the administration's priorities as a standalone proposition that we don't need to be doing, and we do it. And so it started with FISA. And I knew already, you know, Trump seemed to green light it at Mar-a-Lago with Ukraine, so I figured we were headed there too. But I thought it would be the typical GOP thing, you know what I mean? Where it's less funding for Ukraine, so maybe $40 billion, not $60. And then the Israel aid originally didn't have the Hamas $9.1 billion for, oh, I'm sorry, Gaza humanitarian, which is just used to undermine Israel's operation. So it's like we're funding Israel's weapons, and then we fund the missile defense against Israel, which is the human shield operation there in Gaza. So they put that all in there. I mean, it's literally, am I missing this? It's the full shebang.
Look, there's something called a MERV where they combine all these bills together. Look, the great thing is, in theory, we're getting single subject votes. So people know with some greater level of granularity where their member of the House stands versus where their senators stand. They just had one giant package in the Senate. But literally, this is the exact same package. So the bill that is being used for this started out as a veterans bill to help our veterans. The House passes it, you know, overwhelmingly. We send it over to the Senate. The Senate strips all the content with an amendment and loads it up with this supplemental omnibus bill for more wars in more places. And no border security for America. The uniparty supports it. McConnell and Schumer say this is great. America knows that it isn't. And so, you know, Mike Johnson just in January had such good things to say. He's like, we're going to fund a government that secures the border. Anything that doesn't do that is dead on arrival in the House. And yeah, we were inspired. And then within a week of making that statement at the border, he announces he's cut a deal with Schumer And then as he's saying, well, you know, we're surrendering our leverage on this omnibus, but there's the Ukraine supplemental. We're going to fight on that. We can't risk shutting our government down, but apparently we can't risk shutting the Ukraine government down, because not only are we funding munitions and military aid to Ukraine, or not only are we funding you know, Israel, we're funding the government operations of Ukraine, and we're funding Hamas. And you can say, oh, no, no, this is humanitarian aid. The guys with the guns are going to take delivery of the aid. That's how it's going to work. And that's how it's always worked in Hamas controlled Gaza. And so nothing on this is a check against that. We did get the pretense of some amendments, and I will say it's better than having no amendments. But the things that had real content, like stripping the aid for Hamas, weren't allowed in the rule. And that's why, unprecedented, not just on the floor, but in the Rules Committee, this bill passed out only with the support of Democrats. So that's how bad it is. It is a terrible product. It deserves the no votes that 55 people gave to it. But the idea that it's being delivered as a Republican product, people should have be offended, because this is in direct conflict with what Republicans told their voters that we were going to do.
Could you explain what is driving this? So to the average person, there was a clamor over Ukraine in February 2022 when it became the next new thing. But then it's long since petered out. Nobody cares about it. You're not going to find a single person on the street talking about it. Republicans held off on this for a year. Why is it that now, I mean, Republicans, you guys regularly take off for like 2.5 weeks at a time, often will come in Tuesday night, leave Thursday morning. I can't remember Saturday votes. I mean, it's been a long time. But that there's a rush that it has to be done. And then part two is, even to the extent that they have some sort of reason for doing that, you would think, all right, we're giving them everything, not just like a half of Ukraine, but the full Ukraine, the full Hamas. Okay, at least then you get border security, where it's a 90-10 issue. You know, that's where the clamor is. You even have a Democrat senator who just had a staffer killed by an illegal. I mean, there's so many narratives we could push on that. This is where I believe we've gone backwards from the Boehner days. What is driving that?
Look, you know, the speaker's given interviews and done press conferences, and he says, you know, wow, when I became speaker, they took me to the skiff and gave me the briefings, and I just see the world differently. I mean, what should be clear to everyone is there's no way in the world Mike Johnson would have got hired to be Speaker Johnson. Speaker Johnson's positions, results, everything are terrible. And you know, voters know it. But my colleagues are covering his plays. A lot of them, you know, aren't happy about it, but they are. And so, you know, that's just where we are. And, you know, unfortunately, he's got the power to do it. And the question is he going to keep the power to do it? But I do think, you know, people should know there really isn't a path for Speaker Johnson to be speaker in the next Congress. Even if Republicans do somehow, by the grace of God, have a majority that we can't truly say we've earned, because we haven't done what we said we would do on so many issues. I don't see a path for Mike Johnson to continue to be our speaker. I mean, he's just had such a terrible run here. I don't know how he would restore the confidence that's been lost.
Well, I think that's obvious. Yeah, he's not going to be speaker next time. But my concern is it's only April. I mean, this is basically just what he is doing is a legislative ground and pound. I mean, it is. I have never seen anything like this, where you take standalone Democrat propositions, admin propositions of the opposite party, when they are so radical, inflation, invasion, indoctrination, and so much evil that they're doing. And particularly, I actually find the Israel bill offensive. Like, I'm not telling you what to do. I would personally vote against that, even as a standalone. That the Biden administration is screwing with Israel, and then you like throw them money. It's kind of like throwing money at the border when it's a policy problem, and then give just as much to Hamas. I mean, what's the point? I don't, and it's all brought up either under suspension or with the Democrats. Never this clamor to use our leverage for our bills. So Warren, my concern is there are a number of months left here. That what is to stop Johnson from taking any contrived Democrat crisis or desire. We need gun control. We need whatever. And he's just going to bring it to the floor.
Well, we certainly hope there's not a path to do that. I think there has to be a point. That's part of why Marjorie Taylor Greene filed the motion to vacate. We don't know whether she'll make the motion. But, you know, the reality is Democrats, and we think part of the deal struck on this was that Democrats have agreed to you know, normally look, one of the most passive aggressive things in all of politics is this idea of a motion to table. So you have a privilege motion to vacate. But immediately after that's made, there'll be a motion to table, which gives the majority a chance to nullify the motion that was privileged. So it says, yeah, we don't want to talk about that right now. So they basically avoid answering the question. And so, you know, the understanding that a lot of us have is that Democrats have basically agreed not to vote for Mike Johnson as speaker, but to vote for the motion to table and cover the number of votes that are needed to make sure that it's tabled. So it basically locks in Mike Johnson as speaker until January 3rd of 2025, if that, in fact, has been the deal.
I mean, again, my personal opinion is so be it, because it has reached the point that if we're not going to use any positive leverage and we've expended it already at this point, I would rather paralysis than I'd rather have literally zero speaker. I get it that we have a lot of problematic Republicans. We'll never be able to elect a good one, but I'd rather none so that at least we can't pass new bad legislation, which is what we've done. Like, had we not had a speaker, we would be better off the last 2 weeks. Now, you might say, well, the Democrats, like you mentioned, Democrats will support him. Oh, I have no doubt they will. But right now, we are giving the Democrats their priorities without them getting the blowback. We're sharing in the blowback for them. Isn't it better just to let Democrats own all of it headed into the election?
Well, look, yeah, I mean, I think there's a case to be made that the most effective thing Republicans could do at this point is pass a continuing resolution at 99%, keep the government funded till about February 20th of next year, a month after, you know, hopefully we have a Republican president, and just adjourn. I mean, it doesn't seem like we're going to get anything better done. Talk about an insult. The same week that we deliver the Mayorkas impeachment to the Senate, they show boldness and table that, say, hey, we're not even going to take that up. The speaker shows complete weakness and rewards them with a rule backing Chuck Schumer's play on funding more wars in more places. And look, the omnibus was bad enough. It had a $1.9 trillion deficit. And basically, they've said, challenge accepted. We can get this sucker up above $2 trillion. So it's terrible on spending. It's terrible on policy. And unfortunately, there's not a great outlook on the horizon for a change of behavior.
Well, and the reason is because there's no deterrent. And that's where I wanted to kind of land with you on the future of the Freedom Caucus. I'm seeing a success among the state networks, the state Freedom Caucuses, where they're basically running as new parties. So where they run their own slates, like, for example, in South Carolina, a totally different crop. It's literally like it's not Republicans and Democrats. It's Freedom Caucus and Uniparty. Don't we need to head there at the national level? Because what I'm seeing in these primaries is that we're not getting greater numbers. For every one we retain or get in, that we knock off none of theirs. All these guys are getting renominated. So far, I've gotten renominated. Even in the open seats, you and I have talked about this before. Even the open seats, it's really not good. Don't we need to get bolder where everyone knows, are you going to be a Freedom Caucus guy or not?
Well, look, even the label Freedom Caucus isn't a guaranteed solution. But unfortunately, look, the Cheney wing of the party is still alive and well. We haven't fully extracted the Cheney wing. And look, what I think we should do in marketing and branding this is we should call them the Grand Old Party. They are, in fact, the Grand Old Party. They're the old ideas of the party. And we should basically claim we are the Republican wing of the Republican Party. We're the part of the party that actually supports the platform. We're the ones that are ready to do the deeds and the words to go out and do what we said we would do. And the failure overwhelmingly comes from the Grand Old Party. So let them own these failures. Let them own that brand and campaign on it. And I am encouraged. We are getting more conservative members in the House and in the Senate. I mean, good grief. Look at J.D. Vance versus Rob Portman. I mean, that was a big upgrade in Ohio. You know, can't say I agree with either of those two guys on every single issue. But when you look at the voting records and their positions, they much more closely align with the promises we make as conservatives than Rob Portman was making.
Well, JD's stock rose in my eyes when he responded to Don Jr. like, hey, you know, maybe you ought to have a little talk with your dad. We gotta get this done. You know, final point, I know you got to run back in. I just, to me, the nightmare scenario walking into this session, January 2023, was that we would come away with nothing. That, you know, we had about 5-6 leverage points and we would just blow each of them. I am impressed. You just look back and we have tossed interceptions. So we've literally done things we didn't have to do, even according to the old kind of Boehner playbook that you can't have a government shutdown. Oh, we're scared of default, you know, that sort of thing. But just gratuitously use the GOP majority to pass new bad things. So last week you were on, we talked about the FISA 702, and you briefly mentioned an amendment they were about to vote on that made it worse. So it's not just that we didn't get meaningful reforms and we, you know, reauthorized it, but this amendment that expanded it to Wi-Fi hotspots, I didn't process it as you were talking to me and my audience, but now I read up on it. I mean, this could rope in anyone.
Yeah, I mean, it's effectively a takeover of the internet. And if you take the Turner expansion of FISA and you combine it with the TikTok ban, I mean, it's essentially the Restrict Act that Senator Mark Warner put out there. It's my pinned tweet on at Warren Davidson on X. But, it lays out what they were trying to do with the Restrict Act. And if you read through that bill and look at what the Restrict Act tried to do, and then you look at, you know, FISA expansion plus the TikTok ban, it's awfully close to what the Restrict Act does. It's terrible. And it's look, freedom surrender is rarely reclaimed. We had a chance last week. And, you know, look, Mike Johnson got a win last week by getting a recorded votes on amendments on a very divisive issue that really didn't break on party lines. So I don't want to say that don't want that to go unnoticed or underappreciated. That wasn't easy to deliver. And I could say, yeah, we did get the votes. It didn't turn out. Not only did it not turn out the way I wanted, it is actively worse than a simple reauthorization. There's some reforms down in the meat of the base text that are pretty good, but Turner's expansion is awfully bad. And you know, if applied incorrectly, Crenshaw's expansion is bad too. So, you know, we'll see what the Senate does. Hopefully they get some good amendments there and they can fix the damage done in the House. But it looks like the TikTok ban, which was not well thought out in the House at all, is going to be a parting gift to Mike Gallagher. So he's going to stick around long enough to collect his win on the TikTok ban and or the TikTok Trojan horse, as I call it. And then, you know, leave us with one less vote in our Republican majority that, frankly, is largely irrelevant because we're literally implementing Chuck Schumer's agenda.
And just on that note, I just remembered you mentioned that, and I don't want to give them cover because they should have put this in the base bill, but the provision banning the FBI and other law enforcement agencies from purchasing from third parties our data that would otherwise require a warrant. So they did give you a standalone, and it did pass overwhelmingly earlier this week. Could you give us an update as to where that stands and if there's any chance Schumer will allow that in the Senate?
Yeah, we're hopeful. So it's known as the Fourth Amendment's Not for Sale Act. What you have is government agencies buying data that would otherwise require a warrant or a subpoena and basically working around the Fourth Amendment requirement to get a warrant. And, you know, all kinds of problems with that. It's a bipartisan, it doesn't break on normal party lines. We had, Republicans and Democrats working there to get the votes. And, it kind of felt weird when you got Jim Jordan and Jerry Nadler agreeing and me and Pramila Jayapal and Andy Biggs and Zoe Lofgren. I mean, it was an odd coalition. But we got it through the House. And Dick Durbin, who's the Senate Judiciary Chairman, has a bill that is similar. Ron Wyden has the exact same bill in the Senate. I think Mike Lee's a sponsor on both of them. But interestingly, Chuck Schumer is a sponsor on Dick Durbin's version.
Huh.
And so, you know, we're hopeful that they can find a way to move through the Senate. The White House did issue a SAP, basically a recommendation against the Fourth Amendment's not for sale, but it did not come with a veto threat. So hopefully if the Senate can pass something, put up some good numbers, there's a way for this to become law. And that would be a rare win. Like I say, freedom is rarely reclaimed. But this could actually happen, and it would be a win. It's amazing that we got it through the House, and we had to fight hard to get it. But it was a win this week. So I went from great happiness on Wednesday night to just unbelievably like, oh my gosh, can't even believe what we're talking about here on Thursday and Friday.
Bottom line is, what we're doing is not working, and I include myself in this. We need to pray and strategize. Just simply shut up and vote Republican November 5th is not enough. I mean, we really need to, whether it's converting primaries to state conventions, we need to think of force multiplying things, because right now, the current Republican Party with its current leadership, and I mean all of its leaders, it's really not where it's at. And if we just, kind of stay where we are, I do think there's a lot of inspiration from the Freedom Caucus networks. I agree with your, contention that you could have subversive elements even there, but it's at least a starting point where if you're willing to put yourself up to that it's going to harm you with donors, it's going to harm you with leadership, that at least vets it out. Because otherwise, every last Republican runs on our issues. And I mean, no one's going to run on the spend. Oh, I spend too much, and give Biden too much power, or the border. I mean, there's not a single one who doesn't say that. This is at least some way to decipher.
They know the right things to say. It's a good hobby. It's a good hobby to go out and check people's campaign websites. And generally, I try to find like the original campaign. Like, what were your first ads like as a candidate when you were first running for the House? And, it's interesting to see. And, like you say, there's a big gap between the deeds and words. And our voters know it. I hope they hang in there and they give us reinforcements. And, we can restore a government small enough to fit back in the Constitution.
Well,
we could actually afford a government that size.
Yep. Keep up the good fight. You are an endangered species that hopefully we will rejuvenate. At Warren Davidson on Twitter, thanks so much for your fight and for joining us the last couple of weeks, and we'll certainly have you back again.
Yeah, thanks, Daniel. Take care.
Take care. So, folks, again, that was one of the few good fighters. He's a former Army Ranger, Warren Davidson. And look, I give him credit for actually trying to thread the needle and find one thing that perhaps you could get passed, maybe even signed into law with this demonic situation. I still think the Biden administration would oppose it, and even if they got it passed, the Senate wouldn't sign it. And that's why the Dems aren't fighting it so hard in Congress. But I appreciate that. The one thing I disagree with is when he said the voters, they know who's fighting for them. I mean, I think they're going to reward Warren. I don't think they're going to turn someone like him out. I mean, he just won re-nomination. But, in terms of knocking out their incumbents, no, we don't. I mean, and this is why we need to change the landscape on the ground in red states. I now have Con Action Liberty Strike Force teams in the majority of red states. I still need a couple of big ones like Idaho, Montana, and Oklahoma. But we do have a lot of them. And we have a great team in Texas now, North Carolina as well. So conaction.network, conaction.network. And this is really where the fight's going to be. And again, but by the way, what's frustrating is that we are making progress, but again, it's always like painstakingly slow. So, we started out this year, it was a pipe dream, the concept that a state would ever have the guts to enforce immigration law, especially after what the Supreme Court did in the U.S. v. Arizona. Now we are getting votes on various bills, and a couple of them were signed into law to varying degrees. We saw Iowa signed one. We have one that passed in Idaho, maybe one house. I'm trying to think where it is. So, but the key is going to be in how much it's enforced. And that's really the key element. But what it tells me is that if we had more of a focus and more, primaries and more people getting into the conservative caucus in these states and pressuring them on legislation, there's a lot more we could accomplish. This is where it's going to be. Okay, this is the future. Okay, the most likely, you give me a crystal ball, the most likely thing is that Biden will win re-election. Okay, and with that, Democrats will have somewhat of a narrow majority in the House. Republicans will probably have a meaningless 51-49 in the Senate. I'm assuming they win West Virginia and Ohio. But nonetheless, Republicans will do very well in red states. Okay. You know, they're going to win where they typically win. And it's gonna be very polarized. You know, in those states, people enthusiastically turn out, they'll vote for Trump. But and so therefore, we'll be left with only Dems control at the federal level. I actually, look, I mean, the devilish side of me does look forward to that, because that will force people to turn to where it needs to be. They will finally get rid of the dead grass and stop putting their hopes into golden calves. And they're going to have to resort to that. Hopefully it will accelerate the movement on foot, with people actually moving out, conservatives moving out of blue states, accelerating that self-separation, which in itself will kind of juice up the grassroots and make the Republicans better in those red states. But it's all a matter of degrees. I mean, how much you're going to do in how many places and how many issues quickly enough and severely enough. How much we sow right now in the primaries and legislative initiatives is how much we're going to reap next year. That's where it's going to be. It's going to have to go there. But the question is how much momentum we're going to have behind it. So I'll give you an example. Very shockingly, a pretty strong, what appears to be a strong bill, just passed with all support from Republicans in the Oklahoma House, HB 4156. It was the Speaker's bill. And the Senate pro temp, who's not good, by the way, kind of shocked me. So it tells me that this is going to pass bicamerally, and I would imagine Kevin Stitt is going to sign it. It creates a crime of impermissible occupation. So it does criminalize illegals remaining in Oklahoma, entering or remaining. So not just like if we're caught entering, but if you're there illegally, it gives them 72 hours to leave upon passage of the bill. Now, your first time offense, if you're caught, is not so severe. It's a misdemeanor, technically up to a year in jail and a fine up to $500. Likely wouldn't, usually in the real world, that doesn't result in prison time. A second or subsequent offense would be a felony. So, I mean, this is, I'm telling you, like, I'm pleasantly surprised. I did not see this coming. And this is the type of bill that would be a model legislation that should pass in every state. Now, there's two caveats. Number one is the key is enforcement. Okay. And that's going to be a big one. I mean, I'm a little bit suspicious because the governor there just last year supported giving driver's licenses to illegals. So what? He's literally going to round them up? Or if they don't leave on their own, put them all in prison. I mean, I have a hard time believing that, but that is, okay. And then just the one thing in the drafting of the law itself, and it's not really a flaw, but it just needs clarification. This is something we're going to work on. It basically says, anyone who the feds or the attorney general didn't give them permission to reside here. So the problem is it's going to get very confusing, because under our interpretation of the INA, all these people are illegal. The problem is the Biden administration is allowing them to remain in. So you're going to have to put some sort of provision in there, or leave it up to the interpretation of the state governor or AG that we would trust, that would say if it doesn't meet the standard of pre-Biden rules, you're out. Because otherwise all these people could claim, well, Biden allows us to stay pending our hearing in 5 years from now in an immigration court. So that is with that. There is a lot more we do have to push, but we are sadly out of time. But again, this is the sorts of stuff we need to focus on. We'll focus more next week on, again, what we can do in the States, what we can do culturally in our own homes. Again, how many of you, particularly your daughters, are you losing to liberalism? Could we do more to keep them into the fray? We'll talk about that and more next week. Till then, God bless you all. Have a terrific weekend. Micah 6:8.